This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show. Today on the James Altucher Show.
So before we get into today's topic, very thrilling topic, discussing my military career as a colonel of Mississippi, a lieutenant colonel in Alabama, and a colonel in Kentucky, which we'll get to in a second, I do want to address something really important in the news today. The Finnish prime minister says videos of her boisterous partying shouldn't have been made public. So I guess there's a video of her going around Twitter where she's dancing at a party and she's 36 years old. And what I don't understand is people all the time complaining about how we have these old white men as leaders of the world. Why can't, if you can't have it both ways. If you're going to have a young person running a country, she or he is going to occasionally go dancing. And now her opponent is saying she needs a drug test. Like, it's such a crime to go dancing.
That is pretty crazy.
Like, why do people think it's like bad behavior? Like, even look, I am often critical of AOC, but when people were making fun of her dancing at a party when she was first elected to Congress, so what? She's like a normal human. I would rather them be normal human beings than someone who right. doesn't go out. I mean, I never go out dancing, but
right.
we should go out dancing more, by
okay.
the way.
All right.
meanwhile, the hotel, by the way, that inspired the movie Dirty Dancing uh-huh. burned down.
Oh, yeah. That happened last week, right? Or something?
Yeah. So maybe God is against dancing. So the Finnish prime minister can't dance. The Dirty Dancing Hotel burns down coincidentally at the same time.
Okay.
So
at least she wasn't dancing while it was being burned down.
Well, she wasn't dancing at that hotel.
Right.
And then they try to say, oh, you know, maybe she had COVID. Who knows? Anyway, go dance, Finnish prime minister. I don't even know your name. And then here's another thing. This is going to be related to a podcast we're releasing next week, which really scares the hell out of me. But in the news today, the U.S. ambassador says Beijing, this is a message for China, Beijing must show it's not an agent of instability. And let me just say, the U.S. is in no position to demand, like, what's going to happen if Beijing doesn't show it's not an agent of instability? Of course they're an agent of instability.
Yeah.
They have repeatedly said Taiwan is part of China. They have repeatedly threatened the U.S. and all its allies around China. Does the U.S. ambassador think this guy is doing it for fun? Like, they have no intentions on China? Of course they're going to try to take over China at some point. But this is just a preview. We talked to General Robert Spalding next week. We already taped it, but it's really being released early next week.
Yeah.
About the what's going on between China and Taiwan. So check that out. And today I want to talk about, Jay, you suggested it. Robert, you suggested it. Why did someone suggest this topic?
Because it's funny. I don't know. I mean, it's so random.
It was serious business.
I'm sure it was, but it's just funny that.
I mean, like, how often what's the term? Crowned as colonel?
When I was a little boy and I was a fan of the TV show F Troop, I did call it a colonel as well, Jay. So you're not the first. So don't feel bad about it. But it's spelled C-O-L-O-N-E-L. And for some reason, it's pronounced colonel.
Mm-hmm.
So just another weird thing about the English language. But when I was like a little boy and I was obsessed with the military, because Robin, you were talking about this the other day, all our shows when we were kids, or many of our shows, were military. Like, I Dream of Jeannie was you know, Larry Hagman played a major and he was in the Air Force and he was in NASA. And what was another show? F Troop was about a fort in the 1800s. And there was Baba Black Sheep. I don't know if you remember that. It competed with Happy Days on Tuesday nights. And that was about, I think it took place in World War II or the Korean War. MASH took place in the Korean War.
Well, those are the obvious ones. I was talking about I Dream of Jeannie, you know, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, Wonder Woman.
$6 Million Man.
$6 Million Man was totally paid for by the military.
It's all military. And these were just like innocent shows, I thought, you know, but we were being brainwashed.
The Brady Bunch was not a military show.
No.
So we were good there.
That was good. Yeah.
All right. So yeah. So my whole point is that, you know, in the book Skip the Line, I talk about how it's important to experiment, but it's important even to encourage your children to experiment. And my parents weren't always very happy about my experiments when I was a kid, but around the age of 11 or 12, I became obsessed with politics. And the end result of this being is that I became an honorary colonel of Kentucky. Just the same way Colonel Sanders, you know, the chicken, Colonel Sanders? Mm-hmm. Everybody thinks he served in the military. Colonel Sanders never served in the military in his life. He was an honorary colonel of Kentucky. Do you guys know how he became an honorary colonel?
I don't know. Is it because like he cooked the best chicken out there?
Correct.
Yeah.
The obvious answer is usually the correct answer. So the governor of Kentucky at that time, Colonel Harlan Sanders, he was like 70 years old and he owned a gas station. And the governor of Kentucky would always stop there on the way to the governor's office, I guess, to fill up his gas tank. And at the same time, Harlan Sanders also cooked chicken and would serve the governor as chicken. The chicken was so good that the governor made him an honorary colonel of Kentucky. And we'll discuss what that means in a second. And then Colonel Sanders, Harlan Sanders, forever called Colonel Sanders, now that he's an honorary colonel, he started the chain, which then became, first it was originally called Colonel Sanders, then it'd be called Kentucky Fried Chicken. Mm. So I don't know why they changed it. And
yeah, I think you should be called, maybe we just call it Colonel James.
Well, you know, Muhammad Ali is also an honorary colonel of Kentucky. Elvis Presley is an honorary colonel of Kentucky.
We just need to go to the Kentucky Derby so that we can sit in.
If you're an honorary colonel in Kentucky and you go to the Kentucky Derby, you get a special box just for the colonels. I don't know if you'd be allowed to sit there, Robin, but I certainly would be allowed to sit there.
Are there any female colonels?
I don't know.
Wait.
Really? That seems a bit sexist, but they're not.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you call a colonel, a female colonel? Is it the same?
Yeah, it's a colonel and you call her a colonel. Just like there's female generals, right?
Yep.
Oh, right.
What do you call a female president? You don't say presidentess. All right. But no, it's a good point because in England, you can't be a female duke. You're a duchess.
Right.
Yeah. You can't be a female baron. You're a baroness or a countess. Uh-huh. And you're not a king. You're a queen if you're a woman. So in England, if you are a woman, these prestigious titles are different. And you can't even be a sir, obviously. If you're knighted in England and you're a woman, you're a lady.
Right.
Wait. So is that the reason why British getting canceled right now? Because it's so, you know, they only have two pronouns.
England as a country is getting canceled. I wasn't aware of that.
Because it's 2022. Jay, you know, everything has to be gender equality. You know, everything has to be, you know.
But by the way, just before we get into the main topic here, we just took a ride in Jay's new car, a Tesla. And Jay, you're like turning into white trash.
I am.
Like, you're like Asian white trash.
What?
Because, and the car was great, by the way. All credit to Tesla. Although, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out how to open the door. Like, why can't you just have a regular door like every other car ever?
Because aerodynamic, you know, like if the door handle flash in the body, you know, you can get more miles.
Complicated to open that door.
You just look at the button and it says open.
Okay, with every other door in the world, I don't need to press a button. I just open the door.
Okay.
But okay, Jay, the reason I said that though is it's like, okay, the podcast is doing well. You get a little bit of raise. First thing you do is go out and buy a Tesla.
Well, I mean, like I was looking at every other car, but every other car got like 10 more thousands on top of, you know, the MSRP. So it's more expensive. It's worth it to get.
But then we learn you can't even take a far drive because what if you have to wait a half hour to charge your car?
Supercharger, yes.
Well, so, that's like, a problem.
Oh, that's if you. What is it? What if it's the slowest battery? What if it's not the supercharge? How long does
that's
it take?
24 hours.
10 before 24 hours.
So okay, if I'm driving from New York City to DC, am I going to stop in Baltimore and stay overnight in a hotel just so I can make it to DC?
They have the fast things. They have the
fast cars. Charger.
That's only 30 minutes.
Yeah, and also it's not good for you to drive for so long without stopping. So this
what
is like stopping for half an
marketing
hour.
Marketing BS is that. Not good for you. If I'm driving from New York to DC, I'm not stopping in Baltimore for the night. All right. No offense to Baltimore, by the way. The Wire, great show.
I mean, I have to say, when I drive from New York City to Atlanta, I only stop at the city that I know because I watch enough movie to know that if I stop at a random place, I will either get murdered or
that's
get
ghost
hunted.
That's why you took John, our son.
Yes. Yeah, that's why you took him to protect you.
Blonde
you took
hair,
the wrong
blue, per,
you took the wrong person.
A blonde-haired, blue-eyed boy.
Yes.
He's afraid to step on an ant. He's not going to defend you when a gang shows up.
Yeah, I need an insurance. If someone's come to me like, hey, that's the white man right there, you know, I should be safe.
Right. I don't think that works that way, but that could be. But no, congratulations, OJ. It is a really nice car.
Thank you.
Even though it can't drive more than like 3 miles before needing charging or whatever. And the door can't open.
Yes,
but
it can. It's
I will
really
say
pretty,
it was great that there was a chess game. Although for some reason they didn't use like a good chess computer because I was able to beat it on the highest level.
Number one, you're not supposed to be playing chess while you're driving. Okay, so like,
but there is a chess game right next to the driver.
I understand that, but it doesn't have to be really great because I don't think a lot of people probably use that unless they're waiting for their charging.
That's it, because exactly. I did not understand why in order to
that's
drive you had
is.
To shut off
so
the chess game.
So they have to entertain you.
All right,
yeah, I can't even watch Netflix when I'm charging.
See?
Wait, can you drive? Does it bother you to watch a movie while you're driving?
I can't drive. Like I have to like stop and charge at night. I have to stop to watch a movie.
Oh, you have to stop to watch the movie.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's a good idea.
It is.
No, but what about for the automatic driving? Can you watch a movie if you're in the driver's seat?
So the automatic driving, they didn't call it automatic driving. It's called FSD, full self-driving on Tesla. The thing is like you have to keep your hand on the wheel and then there's a camera in the cabin that will look at you, see if you're paying attention.
Who is looking at that camera?
Apparently, according to them, it's the camera. It's only stay in the ecosystem. Doesn't go out to Tesla, but they use AI to tell like if you are paying attention.
I don't quite believe that. Like there's probably like millions of people in China watching all of us drive Teslas. So all right,
that's gonna be the new show. The new
like it's all about Tesla.
Yeah, reality show.
A new reality
Americans
show.
Americans driving
people.
Teslas. And they get to vote who's the best Tesla driver.
Right.
And it becomes hugely popular. We don't even know about it.
On autopilot.
So
what do people do on autopilot when they're...
I mean, okay, I have to tell you this. So when Tesla autopilot just came out, someone shot a porn in Tesla.
And what happened?
While it was going?
Yeah, while it was
While
driving.
They were driving?
While it was driving.
They were having sex?
Did anyone call them from Tesla and say, hey, we see you?
No, but they put it out there.
Really?
Somehow, yeah. I mean, I didn't see it. I have to say, I didn't see it. I don't know anything about
it. How did
you
know about
it,
Jay?
I mean, when I researched about Tesla, it was news. It came out.
I listened to the news and watched news all day long.
When he was researching his Tesla.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, by the way, there was something else I wanted to mention. I just got an email from Masterclass, and Melinda Gates is teaching a class. And I just want to know, who would take this class? It's called Giving with Impact. Like, I understand I'm in favor of charitable giving. And of course, it seems like an oxymoron to say, you know, to add the words with impact. Like, nobody gives to a charity thinking, oh, I don't want to have impact. I just want to give to the charity. So giving with impact is like extra words, like placebo words. But she's teaching a class on how to give with impact. Who is going to take that class? Like, do you need help? If you were going to give with impact, would you say, but I really need to know how to do it?
Not really. But I would take her class if it's how to see if your husband is cheating.
Now, that way, I feel bad for her if her husband was cheating.
He and was.
I know. We suspect, it's alleged that he was, he flies
what
around with his best friend,
What do you do when
Jeffrey
your husband
Epstein.
Hung out at Epstein Island all the time? That would be a good class.
Well, and also, like, didn't he, like, visit his ex-girlfriend every month?
No, once a year, he would spend a week with her, his ex-girlfriend. Yeah. But I don't know if they did anything. They would just, his thing was they would just talk about ideas.
Okay.
Because I wouldn't want to hang out with any ex-girlfriend.
Sure.
I mean, yeah. I mean, like, I wouldn't want my...
There's a reason why they're an ex. Like, he doesn't want to, like, fool around with her. He just...
Oh, sure. Okay.
So,
I mean, who knows?
Yeah. But I feel bad for Melinda Gates. She's trying. Look, here she's trying to find meaning in her life. Yeah. But a class on giving with impact seems really boring to me.
Well, I don't know. I haven't taken it, so I don't know. Maybe it is good. Who knows?
All right, I reserve opinion.
Yeah,
it's like you never judge a book by its cover, right?
No, you always judge a book by its cover. Like, how else do you judge a book? You can't read it in the bookstore. So the only way to judge it is by the cover, then the title, and then any testimonials, and then maybe you read like the first page, you know, or whatever. You don't read the last, you read the first. So the main way you judge a book before you buy it is the cover and then the title. Mm. And so Giving with Impact is the title here. I would rather take How to Play Poker.
Okay.
So I can give more money.
Wait, maybe she's just talking about, you know, Giving with Impact, like where to, you know, send your money, or, you know, there's a lot of scams out there. So maybe she's helping you, you know, curate some places that, you know, and some, you know, NGOs that need, you know, that are real, because a lot of NGOs are not real.
But like, I could Google that and do basic research, right? Anybody could do
that. But this is curated for you. And how much does this cost?
Well, here's the class I would take from Melinda Gates. Mm-hmm. If I'm thinking Melinda Gates specifically, mm-hmm. I would take, if she had a course, 50 things I didn't know about being a billionaire that blows my mind, I would take that course.
Or 50 things I hate about being a billionaire.
Yeah, 50 things I hate about being a billionaire. Or like,
I could think of a lot.
Or a course on how to win a billion of my dollars. Like, and then she has like a kind of treasure hunt about how to win $1 billion for me. Like, those would be great courses. I would take those, like, show that she's like a little interesting, instead of like, oh, Giving with Impact, there's like a million people probably more qualified than her too. She is a big philanthropist. So I shouldn't say that.
Yes. And it is difficult to find the right entities to give to and stuff.
Yeah. Maybe it's about due diligence. How do you do due diligence on charities? And also, like, if she has a course about parenting, that would be fun too. She has like, what, 3 kids?
Yeah, but I don't know. Maybe for all we know, her kids are like hopeless drug addicts. Like, we don't know what her kids are.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about her kids, actually. So to her credit, actually, she's kept her family life very private.
Yeah.
But here's the one story we have heard about Bill mm-hmm. Gates. I don't know if this is really a common story, but remember your friend who runs this big charity in Africa mm-hmm. was telling how Bill Gates gave $100 million to this mm-hmm. one country in mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Africa. Mm-hmm. I actually forget the name of the country. Mm-hmm. And the dictator who was running that country basically stole the $100 million, probably ended up in a Swiss bank account. He left being dictator and essentially disappeared.
Yeah, but that's what happens, you know? So that's why it's good to have somebody that has already curated these things, because there's so many scams.
Why did they avoid that scam?
Well, I guess that was one of the things that they learned.
I could have told you when a country run by an authoritarian, corrupt dictator was probably going to steal your money. I could have told you that.
Well, if Melinda is listening to this podcast, make sure to reach out to us, James and Robin.
I will give her a masterclass on Giving with Impact.
Well, first we should take her class and then we can see.
I'm not going to take her class. Sounds really boring.
Well, maybe I will.
Maybe Robin will.
Yeah. All right. You take your class before back. When I was a kid, I was obsessed with politics, and I was 12 years old. This is 1980, so there was an election happening. So Jimmy Carter was president, and in the primaries, he was running against Ted Kennedy. I don't know if you remember this. And
I was really a lot younger.
Yes, right. I forgot that. And Ted Kennedy, Ted Kennedy was considered, of course, after Robert F. Kennedy died, he was the next Kennedy in line to run for president. And then, sadly for all people involved, particularly a young woman named Mary Jo Kopechne, he was involved in an accident over the Chappaquiddick Bridge where he was drunk and married, and this woman died, and nothing serious ever happened to Kennedy. And so he wasn't able to run for president like people thought in 1972 or 1976, but 1980, people's memories are short. He runs, and he actually had pretty good chances. He blew it in an interview on a news station where he didn't really understand the issues as well as we all thought he did. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Yeah, just because you're a Kennedy doesn't mean you're born with all the answers.
But he had been a senator for a long time too. I think he became a senator in 1964. Well,
just because you're a senator doesn't mean you have all the answers either.
That's very true. So, but anyway, so I was really obsessed with, I didn't understand anything about politics, but I liked the game of it. I liked the personalities. And I was 12 years old. I didn't really know what issues were. So I was, I would read the Watergate transcripts, like the transcripts of all the tapes Nixon recorded in his office. I was obsessed with Watergate. And then there was a great, Hunter S. Thompson wrote what I think is his best book ever, Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail in 1972. People know him from Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but he also wrote Fear and Loathing on the Hunter S. Thompson loved politics. So he wrote about every campaign. So he wrote one of his best campaign book was Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail in 72. It was a great book. And there was a lot of good books about the 1976 campaign. Hmm. So here it was 1980. And I was obsessed with politics. And then one other person who was running in the primaries that no one remembers is the governor of Mississippi was running against Jimmy Carter and Ted Kennedy in the primaries. His name was Cliff Finch. And just like Jimmy Carter was a former Southern governor, this guy thought if one Southern governor could do it, I could do it. So he decided to run against Jimmy Carter and Ted Kennedy. I never once figured out what his issues were or why he thought he would be better than Jimmy Carter or anybody else. But like many people, he wanted to run for president and maybe he wanted to raise money and put some of it in his pocket. I don't know what the laws were like then, but we've seen recent examples of people running for president for a few weeks, raising millions of dollars, and then dropping out of the race. And they simply have like a war chest of millions of dollars they could use for various purposes. Mm-hmm. And we've seen very close examples of that.
Are those taxable?
Hmm?
Are those money taxable?
No, because it's people are donating it to your campaign committee. So it's not like it's not revenues or anything. They're donations.
So it's a scam then?
Well, it could be. There's regulations. You're not allowed to like buy a house with that money, for instance. I think you have to just use it for campaign use. But now you could use it like, let's say you drop out of the presidential race and then 10 years later run for Congress or run for mayor of something, you can use that money. It's like it's with you forever. So whoever donated to you, they kind of missed out. And I mean, look, okay, here's an example. Bill de Blasio raised, I don't know how much money, and I'm not accusing him of anything, but then the people who donated to his presidential campaign, they got those lucrative deals where they owned hotels, and de Blasio moved all the homeless people into those hotels, and the New York City government was paying those hotels full rate in the middle of COVID.
See, that is crazy.
And they were the ones who donated to his presidential campaign.
Right.
And by the way, now he's running for Congress somehow in New York City. And of course he gets to use, I'm pretty sure he gets to use that money he raised to run for Congress.
Who is going to vote for him? I mean, like he was the worst.
But think about how valuable it was for those guys to donate money to him. And again, I'm not accusing him of anything. I'm just making connections, but they got these amazing deals. Hotels in COVID were empty.
But that's not right. I mean, it's just a bad.
Apparently it's all legal and you can't directly connect it. They didn't sign a contract saying, hey, if I donate this money to you, so there's nothing illegal that technically happened, but I don't know why then someone would vote for him for Congress, but you see newspapers already, you know, endorsing him.
And are you serious?
Yeah, the people are endorsing him.
Who's endorsing him? What newspapers?
I don't want to mention because they'll end up lying about me again.
And then also so let's say if you get like this multi-million dollars, you know, campaign or whatever, the money, right? When you're running for Congress, let's say you're like, oh, I want to buy a car and then use the money to buy a car for the campaign, quote unquote.
No, you can't do that.
Oh, you can't do that?
I mean, that's
it's strictly for the campaign. If it's like your campaign employees, they need cars. So
most people have cars though.
No, they can rent, but no, you're traveling around in a campaign. So if you're renting a car.
Okay, well that's one thing, but you can't just buy cars.
Yeah, so exactly.
People.
So that's why I'm thinking is like what if he's like, "Oh, we have all this money. I'm going to run for Congress, but I'm going to buy this car for my employees." And I lost Congress and then they keep the car.
Jay, are you thinking of working for Bill de Blasio for Congress so you can get another
Tesla? You can't
Tesla?
Do that, Jay. You can't.
No, I'm just curious like how they would.
That's
like,
what the dictators do in Africa, okay? You can't do that.
I'm not going to do that. I'm just curious like how would they cheat the money? I'm trying to find
true.
Ways to cheat.
There's
the money.
A gray area. And to be fair, I don't know all the laws.
Stay out of
that.
The gray.
But this is my whole thing is that I don't know why this guy Cliff Finch was running for president. And yet, here's what I was interested in. I was obsessed with interviewing every single candidate for president. So I got this, there were no computers, of course, then. So I got this printout from the Federal Elections Commission of everybody who was running for president. And there was hundreds of people running for president. It's not just like the big name. It's not like I'm trying to call Jimmy Carter, mm-hmm. although I'll get to that in a second because I did try to call him. But I was calling everybody. So for instance, there was a guy named Jim Boren who was running for vice president. And he was specifically running to be Ted Kennedy's vice president. And it was, and then, and his slogan, his campaign slogan was "When in doubt, mumble." And so, and by the way, his brother, David Boren, became a senator from Oklahoma years later.
Is he related to Jason Boren?
No, Boren instead of Boren. No relation. But so I interviewed him. There was another guy who claimed to be the great grandson of Chief Crazy Horse. And he was running on the platform of getting Native American rights. Wow. So I interviewed him. I interviewed dozens of these minor presidential candidates. So people also forget in 1980 was one of the biggest third party candidacies in history was John Anderson, was a Republican congressman from Illinois, but liberal, ran as a third party because he didn't like Reagan and didn't like Carter. Mm-hmm. So he ran on a third party. I interviewed his wife and I interviewed a lot of people. I interviewed senators, congressmen, but I called up the White House once. I still remember the number, I think. It's 202-456 and then either 1212 or 1414. And I called up the White House and I didn't ask for Jimmy Carter, but I asked for the chief usher of the White House. His name was Rex Scouten and I interviewed him. And then on my birthday, my dad took me on a business trip with him to Washington, D.C. And I got to meet Rex Scouten in person. He gave me a tour of the White House. I went to the Senate and the House and I hung out with all these senators. I remember there was a senator, Birch Bayh, and I think his son, Evan Bayh, is the governor of Indiana now, or he was the governor of Indiana. But I visited with Birch Bayh and it was my birthday and it turned out to be his birthday too. So his staff, they all sang happy birthday to both of us. So I was 12 years old. Anyway, I really got interested in this guy, Cliff Finch. Like, why was he running for president? He was the governor of Mississippi, or he was the former governor of Mississippi. And I interviewed him, and I said to him, and again, I'm 12 years old, I said, I think I'm going to endorse you. And so he said, well, why don't you come and visit our campaign? Mm-hmm. And I think he thought my dad would be a big contributor or somehow. So I remember exactly the plane ticket. It was the first time I ever flew on a plane. The plane ticket was $120. Cliff Finch's campaign paid $60 of it, and my dad paid $60 of it. I flew to Mississippi, and I stayed with his campaign manager, whose name I remember, Norman Harris. And I was really nervous because I'm 12 years old, but I still wet the bed every day.
Wait, curious, do you fly there by yourself?
Yeah, I flew there by myself, the first plane ever.
How do you trust the strangers and like older strangers? He could be a pedophile.
Well, he had a family.
Okay.
So my dad, you know, talked to his wife and stuff.
Right.
And also my parents had to warn his wife that maybe I was going to wet the bed. So, which I don't think I did. I think I just stayed up the entire time, or I made sure I went to the bathroom a lot, or I didn't drink any water. But I was terrified of that. And, you know, I would visit the campaign every day. I was there for like three days. And I remember everybody had like huge, right now, if you go to Mississippi, like right now we're in Georgia, hardly anybody has Southern accents, it seems. It's like there's a general U.S. accent now, but everybody had a huge Southern accent. They all talked different. And one person literally said to me, and this is not a slight on Mississippi, love Mississippi. Someone literally said to me in the campaign headquarters, like, I never met a Jew before. And another person said, your initials JA, jackass. And So they just, but they were all friendly. They were all very friendly other than that. And
those are the humor back then, right?
Yeah, that was the humor, like in the Mississippi humor back then. At the end of that visit, Governor Finch took out this big certificate, signed it, and made me an honorary colonel of Mississippi.
Did he put like a knife around you?
No, he did not knight me because this is the U.S.
That's a knight. Okay.
But there were rules. Like if you go to Mississippi, there's situations where even the honorary colonels get like a 2-gun salute, or I don't know. There was some BS got involved in. But what I realized with this though is, this is a thing, this honorary colonel thing. And then I read up on it, and I read that Colonel Sanders was only an honorary colonel, was never actually in the military. But this is a Southern thing. So I wrote to every single Southern governor, and every single one. And I said, I'm about to move to your state, and I really love your state, and I love everything about it. Can I please be, before I move there, can I please be like an honorary colonel of your state? And not everybody had honorary colonelships. But I heard back from every governor. I got a certificate, honorary citizen of Texas, honorary lieutenant.
Texas?
Yeah. Honorary lieutenant colonel of Alabama. Yeah. Jay, you're going to Texas next week for podcast movement and you're speaking. I'm an honorary citizen there. When you're there, know that I'm an honorary citizen.
Wait, so I can just go around like, hey, you know, I'm with James. Can I get into this club?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if maybe I need to be an honorary general to get in clubs, but in North Carolina, they called me an honorary Tar Heel. I don't know what a Tar Heel is. I should probably look that up. And Alabama, I was an honorary lieutenant colonel. And
oh my God.
And then Kentucky wrote back and said, we cannot make you an honorary colonel. You need 3 references from other honorary colonels. So honorary, because Kentucky's, you know, ever since Colonel Sanders, they got a little bit more picky about it. And, you know, Elvis Presley is an honorary colonel of Mississippi. Muhammad Ali is an honorary colonel of Mississippi. So I wrote about this 15 years ago in the Financial Times. I had a column there. And one of my readers was basically the governor of Kentucky, and he got the references for me and made me an honorary colonel of Kentucky.
Wait, I have to ask, what do you get though?
I don't know if you get anything, but other than at the Kentucky Derby, there's a special box that you could sit at for honorary colonels of Kentucky.
It's funny because when you mentioned special box, I'm like, what, do they give you gifts or something? I didn't know it's like a box of seats.
Maybe they do. So Robin wants to go to the Kentucky Derby. We'll see. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. It'll be interesting. Like even if you go to Texas, right? Like, because I remember I've been to Texas with you. I didn't even know this about you because you didn't advertise it everywhere. So let's say if you go to Texas and say that, hey, I'm an honorary whatever, how do you think the people will react?
They would think this guy is an idiot. He is the biggest dorky idiot I've ever seen. No, I don't know. At the time, look, I was 12. I thought it was this neat thing. I had all these certificates hanging up in my room. You know, honorary colonel of this, honorary citizen of that, honorary lieutenant colonel of Alabama. And then I was upset about Kentucky until recently, 15 years ago, or maybe a little longer, 16 years ago, I became an honorary colonel of Kentucky. And then I also, again, I was interviewing constantly. I mean, I would get home from school, and all I would do from like 3:30 in the afternoon till my parents got home is I would make phone calls to Washington, D.C., calling senators and congressmen and trying to interview them. So I interviewed like Bill Bradley, was the senator from New Jersey. I interviewed this guy who eventually became the Speaker of the House. He was the minority leader then. I interviewed I don't know, all sorts of senators, congressmen, state senators, mayors, presidential candidates. And the South Brunswick Central Post paid me $75 to publish some of my interviews. And they had like a full, like 2 or 3 page spread. And that was that. That was my...
Is that your 10,000 hours of interviewing come in handy?
You know what? That was my first interviews. But if I look up, you know, I wonder if I could find it in newspapers.com.
I want to put a poll out there. If I do a series with James called Years with James, starting with 1980s on everything that he has done that year, and, you know, increasingly, would everyone listen? Would anyone want to listen to it? Because I think it was very interesting. 12 years old, and you're 12 years old, you're interested in politics. Like, how?
Well, it turns out, okay, I think I have it right here.
Oh, my.
I think I... okay, so I'm on newspapers.com. It is there, but I have to... It says I have to start a free trial, but I'm a member, so I don't know...
While you're looking at it, I'm just curious. Why are you interested in politics when you're 12 years old? Like, what do you know about politics that got you interested in it?
I don't know. I think there was a lot of drama. If you think about it, like, look just at the little stories we told. Like, like, take Jimmy Carter as an example.
Yes.
There was this unknown peanut farmer from Georgia who was a one-term governor. And suddenly, and there was very famous people like Ted Kennedy potentially running for president. And he won. So there's like a lot of drama in the, it's almost like a sports event, a competition. And then right before that, there was all this drama with Nixon and Watergate. Like, there was a president resigned and like left the White House. Like, that had never happened before. And then the next president, Gerald Ford, pardoned him for all his crimes. Like, and everybody wondered, was there a conspiracy? Like, did they agree to this beforehand? Like, there was all this drama. And then you have the Kennedys, were such a fascinating family. Like, John F. Kennedy, this like good looking guy, youngest president ever, gets assassinated. Then his assassin gets assassinated. Like, what is going on? And then Bobby Kennedy runs for president. He started running for president at the end of the primary season. He should not have, but he quickly became the front runner against, you know, a sitting president couldn't even run against him, Lyndon B. Johnson. And then he was assassinated. And then this, you know, tragedy with Ted Kennedy and, you know, and John F. Kennedy's older brother, Joe Kennedy, had died in World War II. So there was all this, like, almost like, it's almost like watching Dynasty or the TV show Dallas at the time. Like, it felt very dramatic and exciting. And again, I didn't know anything about the issues, but I wanted to know who these people were who were in the middle of all of this. And I thought to myself, I would one day want to be in the middle of all this. Now, fortunately, I never did. Now, the story of when I ran for Congress, I could tell some other time, but because that was a whole different story. But I was just fascinated by all this.
So you're interested in the stories then, not the policy. You don't really care about policy, but you're interested in the in their stories and the tactics they were using.
Well, what stories can you really know? I mean, what issues can you really know at that age? Like, I didn't have an opinion on, I don't know, I didn't have an opinion on anything. What could you have an opinion on at that age?
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm so fascinating. Why were you interested in politics? Because 12 years old, I assume you only care about chess and other things. So like, you wouldn't really care about the policy. Not like right now, everyone's about pronouns and fracking and climate change, right? Back then, 12 years old, there's no internet. You can't really research that policy that well.
That's true. Yeah, right. And I wouldn't even know how to interpret them.
Yeah.
So
also, like, you probably wouldn't have any adult to help you interpret them. Now you probably have, because adults are a lot more educated or they are a little bit more biased or opinionated.
So by the way, so on September, November 16th, 1980, I found another article, not the one that the South Brunswick Central Post published. This one, which mentions me, and again, I was 12 years old. This was much more embarrassing. So there was a newspaper called The Home News, in a different newspaper than the one that published my interviews. But this was the biggest newspaper in the area, central New Jersey. And what I would do when I would call senators or congressmen is I would say I was interviewing them for The Home News. I thought The Home News would eventually publish my interviews. I had no reason to believe that, but I would say to everybody I was calling for The Home News. So the editor of the whole, this is the first time I'm seeing this, so I'm going to read this out loud without really knowing what it's saying. Maybe it doesn't say anything. But the editor of The Home News was this guy named Watson Sims. And so he says here, last January, I had a letter from James A. Altucher, 12, of North Brunswick, who said he had obtained interviews with a number of congressmen. And I am expecting many more senators and congressmen to call me, wrote James. I would like to conduct interviews of political leaders for The Home News. James enclosed a handwritten account of an interview with Senator James McClure, which included this passage. James, do you enjoy being a senator? McClure, yes. Me, or James, what was your greatest achievement in Congress? McClure, there were a lot of them. So, and then Watson Sims writes, while reflecting on James' letter, I was telephoned by the office of Senator Charles Mathias of Maryland, who wanted to know, is James Altucher working for The Home News because he wants to interview the senator? So Watson Sims is writing this opinion piece. We gave James an A for effort, but regretfully declined our inability to put him on a reporting job. We also asked that he not telephone congressmen or senators on our behalf. So, and by the way, then he invited me. He did call me also and tell me, do not do this. And he invited me to visit. And so he gave me a tour of the home news and I got to see. And then he sat me down in his office and said, listen, we turned down even PhDs in journalism for reporting jobs. We're not going to let you, a 12-year-old, write for us. And I said, what if I could break a big story? Because I was going to say maybe Ted Kennedy was going to pick this guy, Jim Boren, as vice president, the guy who says, when in doubt, we mumble. And he's like, no, we're get out.
Okay, I'm just curious. So if you stick with that line of job, like do you think you eventually would become a journalist, or do you like, journalism is just never your thing anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I was always interested in journalism and writing. I mean, I wrote for Financial Times, The Wall Street Journal. I've written for many newspapers, but I never liked journalism because that's hard work. And like, you have to actually like talk to people and do things. I just like writing my own experiences. Okay, so here's, for instance, I found an image of the article by James A. Altucher, a talk with Senator Bradley. And so, for instance, here's, I could read in the image, it's got just a clip of the article. I'm talking to Senator Dale Bumpers, who was a senator from Arkansas. And I said to him, do you enjoy being a, here's my interview, the entire interview. Do you enjoy being a senator? Dale Bumpers said, yes. I said, how did you get into politics? He said, it was a good opportunity. And my father always encouraged me and my brother to get into politics. And then I said, were you always interested in politics? And he said, yes. And then I said, was your father interested in politics? And then I don't see the answer. It was just a clip of this.
It's so straightforward.
Yes.
Do you enjoy being a senator? Do you enjoy being a senator? It's so straightforward.
Yeah. And then anyway, I have a whole bunch of interviews in here. But that was the thing is, though, that was very bad is that phone bills weren't like they are today. Like essentially phone calls are free right now. But because I was calling Washington, it was long. There was such a thing as long distance then. And you would get charged a lot of money to call long distance. And, you know, I was running up phone bills of like $600, $500, $700, which would be the equivalent of like a $3,000 or $4,000 phone bill per month right now. And maybe a little less, maybe like a $2,000 phone bill. But, you know, my parents couldn't afford that. And like my dad would literally hit me when he got the phone bill. Because it was like an addiction. He would say, you have to stop doing this. And I would say, I'm really sorry. I'm gonna stop. And I couldn't help myself. I'd get home from school and I just 202 and start dialing Washington, D.C., just going down the list of all the congressmen and senators. And I couldn't stop. And I would stay home from school sometimes, pretend to be sick because I thought maybe they were going to call me back then. And I would subscribe to the Congressional Record, which was like a print transcript of what happened in Congress every day. It was really boring. And I was obsessed with Congress obsessed with politics. And I had all these experiences, visits to the White House, visits to the Capitol. I went to the Democratic National Convention and was an intern there where I met Chip Carter and, you know, saw all these interesting things happening. I collected political buttons. So I had all sorts of political buttons, even like political buttons for Eisenhower and Adlai Stevenson for president and JFK for president. And of course, Jimmy Carter or Ronald Reagan. So I collected these things and then boom, I lost interest.
Wait, what? Like what happened? Like, is it just one day you just woke up like, screw the politics?
Yeah. One day I just woke up and I was interested. You know, what happens then is you're going through puberty and sixth grade turned into seventh grade. And I was getting interested in girls, but no girl would like me. Like I was really just hideous. And so I became obsessed with getting psychic powers.
Oh, so, yeah, I remember that.
That's another story, but really it led to interesting things that still affect my life today. But that was my experiment as a 12-year-old in politics, and also why, if you run into me in the street, particularly you, Jay, you need to refer to me as Colonel Altucher.
Colonel. I can't pronounce the word. I can't pronounce it. Colonel.
Colonel. You can call me Colonel Altucher. And I don't even care so much about being a honorary colonel of Mississippi or honorary lieutenant colonel of Alabama, but the honorary colonel of Kentucky is it was an honor. So thank you, governor, whatever. I don't know what your name is. And that's the story of my experiment in politics at the age of 12.
You should tweet it out and invite him back on the podcast. Not back, but invite him on the podcast.
I should, and I won't. Thank you very much.